I do have two readings that I'm going to start with today. The first one comes from the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 25, verses 42 through 45, and I'm reading from the English Standard Version. You'll probably be familiar with this. "For I was hungry, and you gave me no food. I was thirsty, and you gave me no drink. I was a stranger, and you did not welcome me. Naked, and you did not clothe me. Sick and in prison, and you did not visit me." Then they will also answer, saying, "Lord, when did we see you hungry or thirsty or a stranger or naked or sick or in prison and did not minister to you?" Then he will answer them, saying, "Truly, I say to you, as you did not do it unto one of the least of these, you did not do it unto me." May we have blessing and understanding to the reading of these words. And I also want to do a brief reading from Naomi Klein from her book, This Changes Everything, Capitalism Versus the Climate, in which she says, "We are trapped within an economic system that has it backwards. It behaves as if there is no end to what is actually finite. Clean water, fossil fuels, and the atmospheric space to absorb their emissions. While insisting that there are strict and immovable limits to what is exactly quite flexible, the financial resources that human institutions manufacture." John, we're going to ask you, if you would, sir, to go right ahead with your presentation.
All right.
Thank you.
We're glad you're here.
The message that I have for you this morning is entitled, "Capitalism Kills True Christianity." So there is a thoroughly messed up and oxymoronic relationship that is alive and well in the United States. It is as putrid and heartless a combination, and it has been laying out the path to suffering for quite a while now. It has been betraying the intention of the true American dream and stomping on those who struggle the most along the way. It's become so much of the water that we swim in that few bother to notice, few bother to name it, and even fewer bother to condemn it. As the title of my message may have already given away, this oxymoronic relationship is between capitalism and Christianity. The Christian nationalism, some politicians are now publicly proclaiming, like the new Speaker of the House, is partly built from and plays into further promoting the system that adds suffering to the lives of the least of these, while heavily favoring those who already have so much. Well, there's nothing Christian about that. For that matter, there's nothing of most of the world's religions about that, not even humanism. In Kevin Cruz's One Nation Under God, How Corporate America Invented Christian America, he lays out a presentation, a carefully laid out presentation of the history of Christianity's participation in the promotion of capitalism in the U.S. He argues that Christianity's Puritan praise for work and thrift played strongly into a sport of a laissez-faire economics, where the way hard work was rewarded had no real regulation from the government. And I suspect that he's right here. Cruz goes on to posit that Christianity ultimately wrapped itself fully up in capitalism in the U.S. in the middle of the 20th century. He opens his book showing that what was once widespread anti-capitalist outlook of most Americans, let me repeat that, what was once true, widespread anti-capitalist outlook of Americans, which I know is hard to believe now, right? But not so surprisingly, after the bleakness of the Great Depression, the average American actually had a strong mistrust, understandably, of capitalists. After all, the way most folks saw it, the greed, pride, and self-aggrandizement of wealthy capitalists is what got them where they were. And at that point, the U.S. was ripe with good soil for the installment of some sort of democratic socialism, where the playing field was more level, and where core values like loving your neighbor and helping those in need were more readily reflected in our economy. But knowing what you know now, you shouldn't be surprised to learn that many of America's wealthy began to worry about some form of a populist movement popping up and ruining the great big gig that they had going for themselves. So, they looked to their strongest resource, which was them, and it always will be money, of course, and did what capitalists do so well. They bought an answer to their problem. In this case, the answer looked like a man by the name of Reverend James W. Feiler. He was a Congregationalist minister who, in today's world, would probably be thought of as a minister of the prosperity gospel. Basically, he was the Joel Osteen of his time. He made crazy amounts of money by basically telling wealthy Christians that their wealth was proof. It was proof of their virtue. God was rewarding them. God helps them to help themselves. Feiler was instrumental in combining Christian thought with emerging economic growth. He started an organization called Spiritual Mobilization. He did it in order to take that message to sort of a larger populace than just his own wealthy congregation. The organization's goal was to destroy the growing Christian support for any kind of welfare state and to instead promote a new perspective of Christian libertarians. As opinion writer Elizabeth Bruning at the New York Times put it, quote, spiritual mobilization, his organization, sought to influence ministers across the country, and with its bottomless monetary resources, it was doomed to success. Christianity was rented out, she says, quite consciously, to buttress a shambling narrative about the continued dominance of the moneyed class in a performance, she says, that even Karl Marx would have found blunt. She went on to say, ministerial proponents of this newly constructed ideology were manifold, powerful, and well-funded, and ultimately opened the way for other pastors with political aspirations like Jerry Falwell, as moral majority cohort, to wax, it opened the doors for them to wax passionate about the gospel while raking in cash from committed capitalists delighted by the arranged marriage of God and mammon. But here's the thing. There is nothing Christian, nothing spiritually satisfying, nothing morally upright about that sordid relationship. It is uncaring, it is unbiblical, and it is inhumane, and it is killing creation. In his dictum entitled Evangelii Gaudium, or The Joy of Gospel, Pope Francis put it this way. We can no longer trust in the unseen forces and the invisible hand of the market. And he goes on to call for redistribution of wealth and reform of economic structures that would ensure greater equality of income and opportunity. The rich, he says, should share their wealth, and he made calls for a new commandment. Today, we also have to say, thou shalt not, to an economy of exclusion and inequality. Confucius put it this way. The superior man understands what is right. The inferior man understands what will sell. Sri Lankan economist and practicing Buddhist Neville Kuranati Leki once wrote that, quote, a Buddhist economic system has its foundations in the development of a cooperative and harmonious effort in group living. Selfishness and acquisitive pursuits have to be eliminated by developing humanity itself. See, the reality is that most, if not all, spiritual practices and teachings stand over and against systems that allow for a small group of people to hold the majority of the wealth while the majority of the people suffer. We've certainly seen that reality, the reality of that as our government rushed to save our economy, not so much as people at the start of COVID-19. Sadly, though, as Israeli historian Yuval Noah Harar says, the history of ethics is a sad tale of wonderful ideals that nobody can live up to. Most Christians did not imitate Christ. Most Buddhists failed to follow Buddha, and most Confucians would have called Confucius a temper tantrum. In contrast, he says, most people today successfully live up to the capitalist consumerist ideal. The new ethic promises paradise on the condition that the rich remain greedy and spend their time making more money, and that the masses give free rein to their cravings and passions and buy more and more. He says this is the first religion in history whose followers actually do what they are asked to do. How, though, do we know, he says, that we'll really get paradise in return? We've seen it on television. Here's the thing, folks. Free market, unregulated capitalism is a spiritual crisis. A spiritual crisis that Christian nationalism buys into hook, line, and sinker. And honestly, it should be of no surprise that we now print on our money in God we trust. Because it would seem that money is the only God in which the nation truly trusts. Sadly, it is a blind and a false trust. Because the capitalism that it represents does not want the best for us, nor does it have aspirations to improve our lives spiritually or otherwise. The capitalism that it represents, the power that it measures, the God that it emulates, wishes nothing more than to create a God class. A class of society to which the rest of us are subservient and must obey. A ruling class who can afford to live outside of the destruction and ruin that they are creating, while the rest of us toil amidst the muck with the false belief that things will get better for us. And folks, this is not some dystopian view of the future. This is an open-eyed reading of most of the world's current reality. And there is nothing good or kind or loving or spiritual about it. You see, while free market capitalism has generated an incredible wealth for a tiny portion of the world's population, it has taken an already devastating toil on the planet, and it has failed to improve the well-being of the vast majority of humanity. If anything, it has done the opposite for most people on the planet. We must remember that the primary issue of the heart of the crisis of climate change is the very way in which we produce things globally. And that is tied deeply to the core value of capitalism, which is profit over sustainability. As long as we choose to continue operating out of that myopic understanding of economics, the crisis will continue, and given its progressive nature, it will only get worse. In a paper from the UN's 2019 Global Sustainable Development Report, scientists argue that worsening climate change is having a drastic impact on the ecosystems and biodiversity, and that symptoms of unchecked capitalism, like rising inequality, unemployment, and death, are also contributing to the destabilization of society. In order to guarantee that humanity is able to have a good quality of life on Earth for future generations, the paper's authors argue that a new economic system will have to be created, rather than the standard band-aid approach governments have taken in the recent past. To put it plainly, capitalism is at fault. Spiritually minded people, particularly those claiming to be Christians, should be at the forefront of the effort to impact the necessary change. Without it, creation is lost. As I said, capitalism is a spirituality killer. Does what we claim, does what Does what we claim with our lives, the way we lead our lives, match what we say matters to us spiritually? Now, we don't have to beat ourselves up too badly because of the answer to that question. The reality is that in today's world, particularly living under the constant impact of free market capitalism in the U.S., any American who's even being halfway honest with themselves has to answer that question I asked, that no, we don't always live our lives that way. The reality is that no matter how much we want to have our spiritual confessions match our life's actions, the only way to exist and to participate in a consumer-oriented society is to not always live into our spiritual confessions and expectations. Which is exactly why we must work for change. We must work for society. Society that's structured in a way that promotes our ability to care for all people. A society that enables us to live up the founding concepts that all are created equally and should be treated equally. A society that values sustainability, not just of resources, but of humanity over profit. Because of the way our nation is structured, this will necessarily be a political pursuit. And trust me, Christian nationalists already understand that. Just as Christianity was used in the early stages of embedding capitalism as a god in the U.S., we must use spirituality, morality, and our humanity to change our nation's economic practices towards the health, well-being, and equal inclusion of all people. It means becoming more active in the political process. It means being more vocal about systems that will sustain creation and sustain individual lives. It means being willing to engage in nonviolent civil disobedience when unjust laws are promoted. It means actively divesting from stocks that promote division, mass consumption, and inequality. It means actively supporting companies who promote fair wages and civil rights, and it also means actively avoiding those who don't. The list of what it means could go on, and there is no way that all of us can do all of them. But all of us can do some of them. But the one thing we can all do, the one thing we all must do, is vote. Next year in particular will be a pivotal year in our nation's history. That is currently our real path to real change. It begins locally and it extends nationally. That is where the change we need begins. It begins with an educated populace showing up at the polls and voting. Voting for sustainability. Voting for the welfare of all people. Voting for basic human rights, equality, and dignity. Voting. Voting for a system that values creation and all of humanity, which depends on.
Bob Dylan.
Together, I accept this as a prayer, a meditation, just an opportunity to breathe in and out. Love is always present and all-embracing. justice, faithfulness, love of peace and reconciliation reaches out to all. We know that love does not forget those who are marginalized, oppressed, and afflicted. We acknowledge that we sometimes do. May we learn to more fully express love by bringing hope and reconciliation. May we be motivated by an unconditional love to stand with those at the margins of society so that they may know justice. Let us realize that although we may have all come here on different ships, we're in the same boat now. May we see that we are in intricately and beautifully connected. May we extend our hospitality to those in need. When in our humanness we neglect the ministries of love, peace, and justice, may we be propelled to be instruments of love's reconciliation and equality. Let us help each other to work to alleviate the circumstances that cause the oppressive conditions in our world. May we understand that in our connectedness, we are called to be each other's keeper, and may we live into that call with all that we have and are. Amen. May you walk in harmony with each other and with creation, recognizing that we are one. And may you know love and happiness throughout your life. May you share that love and happiness with all of those you meet.
We do three different instruments here. Tom Tom Drum, the Jamek, and the Bongo. Last. Okay. So, enjoy.
My favorite.